Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber. This episode of Red Inca is on Great Batters. And so to chat about it, we only went and got one of the best to ever play the game.
Kumar Sangakkara, retired international cricketer, currently director of cricket and head coach of Rajasthan Royals in the IPL and founder of Meta 11.
We talk about his game, Mahela, Sachin, Yunus, Kallis, Hayden, Aravinda, and the batter he wishes he was. Tell me about Meta 11. Did I say that right? Meta 11? Is that how it's supposed to be like all together?
Yeah, Meta 11. It's an exercise among friends to really try and bring cricket into the metaverse in terms of customizable owned avatars that play in bespoke and created stadia digitally, and to kind of democratize access so that anyone who loves cricket, and we know there are so many of us out there, can play against each other, play as communities, play as friends, and really earn rewards in terms of engaging and being able to create cricketers that they can watch and own. So it's quite an exciting project, and we've been developing it for a couple of years, and we're progressing quite well.
So is it like a combination of fantasy cricket and like a video game sort of, but in the metaverse?
Yes, it is, and also kind of Football Manager. It's AI-driven, so the avatars will learn as well. You actually don't play for the avatar. The avatars just play. They learn as they go along. Each avatar is an all-rounder, and the games are very, very short, between 2 and 4 minutes. You can play one v one or a smaller team against a smaller team. So the possibilities are quite exciting.
Just have you played, and are you any good?
Well, I think I had. I was all kind of geared up with all these sensors, and I was one of the avatars that can be dropped in, and so anyone can actually be kind of drop their own stats in. You can create avatars out of all the data that we've been collecting as well. So it's quite exciting. I'm not really sure how good I was, but because it's so short and my T20 record is not that good, I think it's pretty obvious that I won't be much good at it.
I love the idea of you playing the game with the avatar of you and then getting frustrated yourself for not scoring quick enough. Comes full circle, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And that's the whole point. And being able to kind of understand the frustrations that coaches, players, spectators go through all in one when you are actually in the game is very, very interesting.
Oh, beautiful. Well, good luck with it all. I know you've already raised a lot of money, and it's going quite well at the moment. So hopefully it keeps going in the right direction.
Hope so.
I want to go back a little bit now. I've got you on this podcast because I'm doing a project on the best batters of all time. And believe it or not, you're involved in this book, even if before we spoke, because we talk about your batting quite a bit. What do you think it is about your batting that, you know, that worked so spectacularly compared to other players? Because you're obviously a very talented player, but you played alongside, you know, guys like Mahela and, you know, and other players, but people don't end up with the average of, you know, of Kumar Sangakkara. So what was it specifically, do you think, that made batting work better for you than someone else?
Well, I think it's testament to the beauty of this game where, you know, everyone's talented to a certain degree. I wouldn't consider myself a special talent. I think I'll reserve that for the likes of Jayawardene and Aravinda De Silva and Sanat Jayasurya in our side, likes of TM Dilshan as well. I was more workmanlike, and I had to find a really effective method that worked. I grew up in a very technical environment with all the coaches in Sri Lanka. It was always by the book. My father was my first and last or major coach, and he was also extremely technical. And for him, it was never about runs. It was always about the way I batted. And there would be times when I scored 100 and he'd say, well, that was awful. Or I'd score 15 and he said, that's the best you've ever batted. So it was always a case of being, you know, driven to reach a stage of technical excellence, which I don't think always works, because what I found out throughout my career is that technique has to be effective in delivering performance and quantifiable performance, because talent and potential without an output, a measurable output, is just talent and potential. I went through quite a few stages in my career coming in, I think, into the national side much sooner than I probably should have been allowed in, because I don't think I'd even scored a first-class 100 when I made my debuts. And then trying to figure out a method by virtue of just arriving doesn't mean you've made it. You've got to stay there. You've got to cement your place and then continue to grow. And I experimented a lot in terms of my technique and my batting. I changed my grip. Aravinda De Silva was the first who really spoke to me about changing my grip and learning how to watch the ball. So I wasn't just a kind of a hacker square of the wicket, but I could also play straight and develop an onside game a lot better. And then I went through stages where I changed almost every fundamental I was taught never to change. And I think that was one of the things that really helped me, because I had the knack of being able to change my grip, my stance, my tap, my trigger movements, the height of my stance, all of these throughout careers, depending on conditions, depending on how I was feeling, to really be able to get through the tough periods of innings until I got my flow. I also kind of understood what timing really meant, and timing to me is always being in sync. So it doesn't matter what you've done in the past, and I hated this kind of positive reinforcements about, think about your last best innings, which is, to me, I found to be nonsense, because they're all gone. You can't recreate the past. And I spent a lot of time trying with no real outcome, because every day is different, even if you're coming off or in a purple patch. It's really about understanding the dynamics of the day and allowing your body the time to really fall into sync with what's happening on the day. The same pitch, the same bowlers, the same environment, everything. But there are always nuances and subtleties that change. You could have slept a little bit too long. The bowler might be in better rhythm. The pitch would have deteriorated or changed. In England, overcast conditions suddenly do strange things to the ball. So, I allowed myself the time, rather than fighting to recreate the past, to understand, okay, well, this is it today. How do I now get through the tough times, and how do I end up scoring runs? The other thing I kind of realized was also that, you spend way too much time trying not to get out rather than accepting the fact that that's inevitable. But what are you going to do until, by the time that delivery comes along or you make a mistake, because, all of us are humans. Or even if you don't make a mistake, a perfect shot could still get you out in cricket. So, I actually started putting a lot more value on runs scored and being effective, and understanding, how to change that up in an innings. So I would have periods where I would buckle down. I had periods where I would take a lot more risks. I had periods of acceleration throughout my innings. So there was quite a lot of moving parts and quite a lot of things that go into batting from a personal perspective. But if I were to recap it, one is, I started to understand myself a lot better, and that really helped me plan out my training and how I reacted to challenges and how I went about answering the questions that were being asked of me, not just by myself, but also by the opposition. Number two was a mindset that was really open to change, knowing that change is absolutely inevitable and is a must as long as you change with a plan and with a view to improvement. Number three, bat to score runs. And finally, don't try to protect the reputation or a legacy or kind of a career. You just have to be open that every day is a new day and you're batting anew. And those are the kinds of things, along with, of course, shot repertoire and everything, that really helped me kind of score the runs I did.
It's really interesting, because you described the other players in your team as being more talented. But what you were talking about there is that, and I've spoken to quite a few experts now about, former players and batters and bowlers, and they talk about there are a lot of the great batters just see the ball earlier. Or let's say Matthew Hayden, he has a huge forward step and a lot of power, or they have some sort of supernatural skill, which means that their game kind of works everywhere, so they don't have to change. What you're talking about is you're a different batter, kind of, even in one innings, from the morning to the afternoon. Like, you're constantly tweaking your game. Do you think that is something that you learnt, or do you think that is something within you as a person?
I think for me it was necessity. I just realized that I couldn't just bat the same way and expect the same results, because the game moves forward, the opposition plans against you, all the strategy that they bring in is to try and challenge you to make a mistake or bowl at you in manners that make you uncomfortable. So if I try and stay static, I can get away with it for quite a long period. Like you said, depending on whether I see the ball early, reflexes, just experience, just having a really settled method, all of that. But there comes a stage in everyone's career, and usually it's towards the latter part where you just frustrate yourself trying to do the same thing. Whereas other sides and bowlers have moved on to do different things to you that you don't seem to have a proper answer for. So there were times when I was really settled and would bat long periods of time the same way. But then when I realized that I needed to change, I was quick to do it. I mean, I had lots of conversations in the dressing room with Mahela Jayawardena and Tilan Samrawira when they were playing with me. And a lot of the time they would be like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you changing this? You're batting well. And in my mind, it was just a case of trying to see if is there anything that I can do better. At the same time, if you're going through kind of a difficult period, even if to change a little thing and to take your focus away from, you know, kind of wallowing in, oh, I didn't score runs, or I'm having a bad patch or something, just something tweaking to get your mind off that, to focus of, okay, I'll work on something, is something different to kind of, you know, inspire me or take my mind off. So, you know, I kind of get back into the rhythm of things. Those are things that I kind of had in terms of little mechanisms that I tried to try and score runs.
I want to talk about a period of batting when I think you were at your absolute best. You may not agree, but kind of that period from the 2015 World Cup when you made all those hundreds. I was lucky enough to cover a couple of those, to when you were making runs at Surrey, like, you know, in that period towards the end. That sort of shows me that you're, like, rather than just being a naturally gifted player, you're a player who was still tweaking things right until the end and getting it right. Is that your best period? And is that just the accumulation of knowledge, of experience, and your physicality still allowing you to do the things that you want to do all coming together? Or was it something else, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was all of that. And I still liked playing. I still loved batting. I think I was very much ready to be away from the international stage. I knew that my international career was done. I was very, very settled and happy in walking away from it. And then Surrey gave me kind of that nice cooling off period to you know, exercise any demons that I may have left over from, you know, about, you know, not trying to finish cold turkey. And in terms of county cricket, what I really understood, Jared, was that there is a very repeatable method, an easy method that you can settle on to score runs. You know, short and wide, throw your bat at it, defend straight, and as soon as spin comes on, take it down for as many runs and as quickly as possible. And it just worked for three seasons for me at Surrey. I also had a period, you know, when I was scoring in Australia against England, just coming back a few runs before that. And again, 2012, 13, 14, 15, when I really changed, or 2011 onwards, when I changed my attitude towards one day batting, with the change in my role and mindset, and also with some changes to the playing conditions in terms of field restrictions. Yep. So there were various periods of time I can go back and say, well, that was a really interesting period for me. But in terms of finishing off my career, I was still tweaking things, as you said. And it was, again, mainly because I knew I had to score runs. You can talk about a settled technique and never changing, but what happens with age when, you know, your reflexes might slow down or certain things change, you put on a bit of weight, your physical abilities change, what do you do then? Do you try and just battle on and really be attritional about never changing? Or do you just say, well, actually, I have to change? So I always think it's better to anticipate it and change a bit sooner rather than being forced to change when your back's against the wall. So that period I really enjoyed with Surrey. I had a lot of freedom. I love that dressing room. I love the structure at Surrey. And you can see how good it is by the amount of England cricketers they're now producing time after time, and really good ones. So I had a great time, and that really helped me to play better cricket.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today. There's a few different sort of categories that we can put the great batters into. So, you know, someone like Boycott didn't like to get out. And, you know, Shivnarine Chandrapal is probably another one, right? And you got other players who love to score runs. There are entertainers. Everyone's kind of had these different ones. I don't know where you fit in to this. You're not as, you know, Mahela. I was sort of Mahela, as even though he was fighting for everything, he loved to be stylish. He loved to play that beautiful inside-out cover drive off the left-arm finger spinner and show he could do it. Where do you fit in, do you think? Are you? I mean, you said technician before, but there has to be a reason you wanted to be that good in the first place.
I'm very competitive. I also had, I don't know, perhaps it's an environment I grew up in as well that I had, I don't know, I could put cricket in perspective. I knew it wasn't going to be the end all and be all of my life, but for as long as I was playing it, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be recognized as being one of the greats. So when I started, I had this idea of 20 hundreds. That's actually the lower limit of being able to say, okay, you were good. Yeah. Then I thought, okay, let's get to 25, let's get to 30. So I was just pushing myself continuously to score more runs, score more hundreds, and leave something of myself that's to be recognized. And I could also switch off at the end of the day and do absolutely completely different things and never think about the game on that day. So I had quite a, you know, good support structure as well, Jared, family and friends, a lot of whom had never really watched the game or weren't too enamored with cricket. So that really helped me. But I'm not really sure whether I fit into any of these categories over there. I would, you know, want to, as long as, you know, like this interview in itself, you're talking to me because you feel that, you know, there's something valuable there, maybe for your book or whatever it is, to understand, you know, how I did these things. So that's a confirmation in a way of doing something right in my view. But I've had a lot of people who, you know, you don't do these things alone. And, you know, I speak to my father. For him, it was always about technique. I had another coach, Mr. Sunil Fernando, who was coaching me since I was about 13, 14. And for him, it was just about batting well and scoring runs. And he would never change anything that was working. So he would look at me and he would know my technique inside out, as my father did. But he would say, okay, that's working. It might not be exactly by the book, but that's what cricket's about. You've got to be able to adapt and create your own method. So I really don't know. I don't have a perfect answer. If you were to say, who would I have liked to have batted like, then there are so many around the world. But I would say Brian Lara, Aravinda De Silva, those two stand out as just absolutely top-notch for me. I always have Aravinda in my top 5 batters I've ever watched in my entire life. Batting, even now, I think he can out-bat anyone, like outbat me any day in the nets. He was just supremely special, and so was Lara, and so was, of course, Mahela's, Tendulkar's, Dravid's, Sehwag's, Hayden's, Ponting's, Kallis's, all of these, the Pollocks, Barry Richards. I met Barry a few weeks ago in South Africa as well. So they're all amazing, but you know, there were two people, you know, that I really wanted to. If you ask me, yeah, Aravinda and Brian, that's who I would like to bat like. Maybe Sir Vivian Richards as well, a little bit, have the swagger and that kind of, you know, kind of presence that Sir Viv brings to anything. Even now, when he walks into a room, everyone just quietens down and just looks at Viv walking through. You know, he's that kind of personality.
There's one last question about your career that I've always been interested in. You and Clyde Walcott both started as wicketkeepers, and you both average around 40, which is huge for a wicketkeeper, less so in your era, but certainly in Clyde's era. But you take 40 from any wicketkeeper at any point. You both give up the gloves, and then you both average about 60 after that point. Your averages go through. How much of that is when you keep it test matches, especially for yourself, you're up at the stump scrambling behind Murali and, you know, these guys, you know, over and over again. So how much of it is it just gets tiring towards the back end of the match? How much also is the average was just lower because you, as you said before, you were learning cricket when you first came in. You weren't a fully, you know, you weren't someone who'd made 10 first class hundreds and came in on the back of that. They threw you in early on. So I've always wondered, did you feel wicketkeeping did hold you back as a batter, or was it just maybe you were still developing as a batter at that point?
I really can't answer that question in one day cricket and T20 because keeping was a must. Test cricket, it really helped me get in the side. Even in one day cricket, it helped me get in the sides, number one. So I love the fact that wicketkeeping opened the doors because I could keep and bat. In test cricket, it all depends on where you bat. I'm not sure where Clive Walcott batted in what position, but I batted started at five, but moved up very quickly in my third test match, in my first series, to number three. And that is physically challenging, even as a 22-year-old, going through keeping in the heat, keeping in overseas conditions, whatever, it really saps energy, both mentally and physically. So when I do go into bat, a fall of an early wicket, which happened quite often, you know, during certain years, no matter how much I was enthused to go out and play well and really wanted to do well, there are certain things my body just wouldn't do. I'd be quite lazy in doing things that I know I shouldn't have done, or not planning properly, or not kind of reacting to things properly. So that came about. So when the selectors actually wanted me to give up my gloves, I was quite adamant that I shouldn't, because I knew it was kind of an insurance policy for me to stay in the side if I were doing badly in my batting, if I were keeping well, you know. So I wasn't really happy that I was asked to. But what it forced me to do was take a new look at my batting and said, all right, if this is all I have, now I've got to be really, really good at this. And I understood that when we did travel overseas, I would still have to take the gloves at certain times in England, in South Africa, just to ensure that we balance the side out and we could play that extra full batter in the side and allow for the same bowling attack to come in. There were many times after that, you know, as well, that I had to take the gloves on at certain times, but I still had to bat three. So there were times when I did that out of necessity after really being told to give the gloves up. In one day cricket and T20, I just love keeping. I love being behind it. I think it was physically very taxing, but I think it really helped my batting as well, because I had a first-hand idea of how pitchers behaved and what was happening on it, and could really, and with my keeping skills improving, I could do a really good job behind it and in front. And again, it allowed us the freedom to play another player in the side without, you know, having someone just take up the gloves for the sake of it. So that was. A hard question to answer, but test cricket, definitely it helped my batting with that fatigue and the position I batted. I mean, you look at Adam Gilchrist and Jos Buttler, two examples. I mean, Gilly was fantastic in everything he did, but the number you bat at in terms of Gilly and Jos doesn't really give you the opportunity to build long careers of huge runs. What it gives you is the ability to win games, and that's
Right? Like, it's the break that you need.
And a break. But the nature of your game changes the moment you bat there. I mean, Jos, to me, was an exceptional, exceptional cricketer. You know, batting at the 6-7, I just wish he'd just kind of put the thought of batting properly or technically aside and just embrace the role of having to win games. And he would have probably won many more games than he ended up winning for England. And Gilly was just exceptional in that role of batting with the last kind of recognized batter and then absolutely putting to sword a bowling attack when he was batting with the tail. So, you know, the nature of your game changes. But the fact that I gave up my gloves and batted at three allowed me to score a bigger volume of runs.
Walcott also batted in the top. Well, he opened, batted 3, 4, and 5. So it's probably a similar thing. He also had back in issues, wicketkeeping. So he had to give the gloves up eventually. But I do, it's an interesting one when you look at it, because as you said, you're probably in the side earlier because you're a wicketkeeper, which is also why your average was a little bit lower, because you weren't quite ready to be at that level. So I think that makes sense. I want to get you on a bunch of batters. Let's just start with Aravinda De Silva, because I mean, he's one of my favorite players of all time. He doesn't have the kind of average that puts him into some of the class of some of the guys that we'll be talking about in a moment. But for people like you and I, we saw him and we understand the genius of it. What was it about Aravinda De Silva that you thought made him so special?
I think he and Brian were very similar in personality. They needed to be really inspired and motivated to give their best. And being in a group of highly talented cricketers, but him being the only kind of genius until, of course, the Muralis and the Vasis came along and Sanath at a later stage as well. Or Sanath and then Murali and Vasi. Mm-hmm. Sanath came before them. And until he went to Kent, I think, in the mid-90s, he didn't really understand what it meant to be consistently good or great. I mean, I think there were times when he was just bored or he wasn't really motivated within the side because he loves to win. He's a great cricket brain. He has a great understanding of his game as well. When I played the side, we were very determined to do well everywhere we went, not just at home. We wanted to win away. We wanted to keep winning World Cups like we did in 96. I think if Aravinda had started in a side that had so much motivation and so much kind of pushing and challenging each other to get better, he would have scored, 40-plus hundreds, scored 13,000, 14,000 runs as well. But I think at that time when he played, it was kind of easy being, the genius.
He was the star in the smaller pond, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I remember when I started playing at NCC in the late 90s, 97, Aravinda was part of NCC. And after 1999, he got dropped after the World Cup, quite unfairly, I think. And he would come and play club cricket. And there were days when he would call up and say, what time's the game starting? We'd say it's starting at 9:30. He said, okay, I'll be there by 10:30. If you're batting, if you're fielding, put in a reserve until I come in. And if you're batting, I'll turn up. And if a wicket falls, I'll walk in. If you were fielding, he'll come in straight from the car park onto the ground in his whites with his sneakers undone. He'd come and stand at first slip, call out to the coach saying, I haven't eaten breakfast today. Send me two pastries. He put one pastry in his pocket, munch the other at first slip, and just stay there. And then if a catch came towards him, he'd step aside, look at the second slip, and go, how old are you? And they'd all be in their early 20s. Said, oh, that's your job to dive and catch it. He'd then go out to bat, and the opposition usually would put their worst bowler on, like all their part-timers. And you could see Aravinda's eyes just glaze over. And he'd be like, oh, what am I doing here? And he'll step out, get out, hit the ball up in there, do whatever, come back and say, what number is Harshant Tilakaratne batting? And we'd go, he's batting number 5 or 6. He'd say, oh, he won't get out till tomorrow. I'm going home. Call me if you need me. And off he went. But then there were other days when he had something to prove and he was trying to get back into that side because he was really hurt that he was left out. He'd be there before all of us. He'd feel that short leg slip. He'd bowl better than any off-spinner other than Murali. And then when he went out to bat and the opposition made the mistake of putting on one of their best bowlers or bouncing him a couple of times or making some remark at him, he will score 150 to a 200 in the blink of an eye. And you'd be like, that's genius. And it was the same after he went to Kent. I think Mark Benson said, that when it was cold, Aravinda was miserable and in about 4 jumpers, not scoring a run. And he thought they made the biggest mistake in signing him for Kent. He said the sun came out, his demeanor improved. He actually started enjoying it. And he said he's never seen another overseas player bat like Aravinda did in the English summer. I remember he became man of the match in a losing cause, I think maybe against Lancashire, but likes of Azim Akram, everyone bowling, scoring 100 in a losing cause. And he brought that. Suddenly he realized how, I've been an overseas player, professional. This is my responsibility. He came back 95, 96, 97, 98. He was just incredible. And then when he came back into the side in 2000, 2001, I remember him telling me, he said, you know, if I wasn't left out the way I was, I would have scored another 20 hundreds with one eye closed. And I believe him because I know that when he's motivated and inspired, he will do that. So that was the level of Aravinda De Silva's genius. Unfortunate that it was at a time when we probably didn't put as much into terms of like being the best until that 95-96 period. And after that, he was a completely different.
Well, he had a pretty handy 1996 World Cup so, you know, with bat and ball by the end. Let's go through some of the other players. Obviously the one that you played the most with is Mahela. Mahela is someone who I think he averages 35 outside of Asia and 55 or something inside of Asia. He would almost be one of the greatest specialist batters that we've ever had. And, you know, having watched him and even talked to him about how he plays spin bowling, he kind of feels like, to me, he sees it on a different level than everyone else does. What was it like batting with him, and what do you think made him different?
Oh, he was just absolutely gifted. Again, on the levels of Aravinda De Silva in terms of being gifted. He had just this lazy elegance, plenty of time, technically extremely correct. Even with his backlift, you'll see that it's not an open backlift. It's a very close backlift and going back straight. And if you watch him and how his front shoulder and head works all the time, you always see that, okay, if you have that back so straight, it's really difficult to be good on the short ball or good on the legs. But because of that easy movement of that front shoulder, how early he saw the ball, it just, his complete game was incredible. Against pace or spin, when he was on his game, it's incredible. It's very difficult to top him. So he would, spin was, for him, it was wrist. It was hitting against the spin, hitting over extra cover. Again, he was a batter who always looked to impose himself on the game, very much like Aravinda, like a Brian Lara, like a Ponting or Hayden. Sehwag, differently done, but the same attitude. Mm. I want to be on top of these bowlers and I'm going to stay on top for as long as possible. I'm going to take risks to do that. And if I get up, so be it. And it was amazing to watch. I really loved batting with him the same way I did with like a Dilshan, because you have times where, you take the lead in terms of being aggressive, then you take a back seat, you watch these guys put the bowlers, to all parts of the field, then we kind of knew each other's batting really well, so we kind of fed off each other really well, and that was really great to watch. At the start of his career, he batted very little at training. I was the opposite, but at the back end of the innings, he had to do that change because of changes, as you say, reflexes, all of that, like all of us went through, and he practiced a lot more, but. He's also in that category of genius in terms of batting, making batting look so easy in any condition. He also had, huge peaks and troughs, as many of these, great batters will have. Consistency is not something that they're really worried about. It's about being the best on the day. He was supremely gifted and amazing to bat with.
What did you learn from his batting?
Oh, just the value of runs. How easy it is to postpone being dismissed when you're scoring runs and you're constantly putting pressure on the bowler, and being able to have a better relationship with risk in order to, understand the rewards that come with that. So they were great to bat with him and talk to him about cricket. Also, in our days, we had different roles. When I started at number three in one-day cricket, my role was to bat 45 overs. Let everyone else bat around it. Same for Marvin when he batted. And that was really nice that we had so many different players that could do different roles. But for players like Mahela, for players like Dilshan, for Sana, it was just about you be the genius because they could. And we'll do the supporting roles. And Sri Lanka was so good for so many years as a result of the diversity of players who could do so many different roles. Very few players become, you can be great players or whatever, but there is that touch of genius. Players like him, they have that genius in them.
You mentioned this player before, Samer Awira. He doesn't get as much credit these days. I think you and Mahela stole all the limelight in Sri Lanka, and he doesn't get remembered. But he was impossible to get out on his best day. Another incredible player. What do you think made his batting special?
I think he was a little bit like me. Worked hard, brilliant against spin, and then he found a method against pace. He was very, very strong mentally. He was always the kind of player easiest to drop in terms of a batting lineup. He knew that, and then that made him a lot more determined. I remember his debut. He scored almost a run a ball 100 against India on a turning pitch at the SEC. And he was, along with the likes of Harshant Tilakaratne, you know they'll score the runs for you. In spin, he was really great with his wrists, great driving down the ground, hitting against the spin, which I always think hallmarks of great players of spin always have that ability to hit against the spin. And Tilan Samarawira was just that. I mean, he started off as an off-spinner and developed into one of the best test match players that we ever had, and also a very, very handy one-day player. So for him, it was about determination, really buckling down and being able to absorb pressure. He was very different to Mahela or Aravinda, but as effective.
Just on all of you, really, including Aravinda, you know, I think Gaul is probably the wicket that spins the most in the world, if I remember the Prithviz data from the last time I checked it. Sri Lanka is generally the place where you have the least amount of seam bowled in test cricket, but also in first-class cricket. How hard is it to be a young Sri Lankan batter and you're smashing the spinners everywhere and you're used to the ball ragging sideways and, you know, Glenn McGrath almost knocks your head off and, you know, Shoaib Akhtar is bowling, you know, at 90 miles an hour. Like, there's no way you can instantly be good at that, right? That it's spin comes, playing spin must come so naturally to so many of you guys, but playing pace must just take a lot longer.
Yeah, I think Aravinda was very different to the rest. He just had this ability to hit, whether you bowled 120 or 150, didn't matter. If you bowled short, it disappeared. And he had a lot of time and ability to do it. He also...
He made runs in New Zealand when he was quite young on green pitches. I remember that.
Yeah, he scored a double 100, and I watched that. I think Martin Crowe scored 299 as well in that innings, in that match. Aravinda just put Danny Morris into the spot. He was pulling him off a good length. He was that good on the short ball. And he also rarely wore a visor early on, so he had to watch the ball really well. And he always told me that he used his gloves and his bat as a second line of defense in front of his face, and that's how he learned to watch the ball so well. I grew up in Kandy, where the weather's quite damp and rained a lot. I played at Asgiriya. The pitches were always green, always seamed, always...
Bit more bounce as well.
A lot more bounce when I was there. We had a director of cricket at my school who spent a lot of time in England, so the pitches were always green. He actually gave a test pitch. I think it was Vasi's debut against Pakistan in Kandy. I was still in school, I think, or I remember watching it. The pitch was so green, and against Waka and Wasim, last thing you needed. I think the match was over in 2.5 days. And they just ran through us. So that helped me to understand how to play pace better. But one thing we did change after 1999-2000 was the way we trained. Early, it was very easy. You know, there's this great story about Ravindra Pushpakumara running in and bouncing Sanat Jayasuriya. Now, Ravindra Pushpakumara bowled a bit like Waqar Yunis, had an extraordinarily long run-up like Shoaib, a little bit slingy, quick. And he had come into training one day and he had been bouncing Sanat Jayasuriya and making Sanat look very uncomfortable, late 90s, I would say. And someone had said, "What the hell are you doing, man? You're bouncing the next captain of the country. Do you want to be in this team or not?" You know. And he said, oh shoot, okay, fine, I'll pitch it up. But I think after 2000, we had no restrictions in terms of, you know, bowlers bowling to us in the nets. If we wanted to be the best, we had to be challenged in the net. So with Dab Watmore coming back for his second stint, John Dyson coming in, captaincy changes to Sanat, and then Marv and Harshant, Mahela, we just ensured that every practice was as challenging as it possibly could be with a look to performing outside the country. New balls, bowlers overstepping. Even when the sidearms came in, you know, don't take throwdowns for the sake of it. Make sure that you're being challenged. So the practice intensity changed and our work ethic changed to a massive amount of learning how to play the short ball. We knew we'd get bounced when we went abroad. So we'd have wet tennis balls, we had tennis rackets, we had all of these coming in, Tom Moody, Trevor Penny. They did a lot of work in terms of the short bowling for us as well and fast bowling. So we did a lot of work and that helped.
we've done the great Sri Lanka batters. Let's move on. I've got this almost in, I think it's almost in the list of the players who made the most runs in the games that you were in. But Sehwag comes up next, and we know that he loved playing against Sri Lanka. That famous 99, I think he made when someone bowled a no ball, in a one day or at Hambantota or wherever it was.
It was Dambulla.
It was Dambulla. I should have known. I was at the ground, but I knew I was traveling around that part of the country. But he always seemed to love playing against Sri Lanka, and we know what a great player of spin he was. You talked before about, you know, people like Viv and Lara and their the way that they attacked and the way that they wanted to put pressure on you. Sehwag was almost someone different. He almost did it in a meditative state. Like if the ball was there, he hit it for four. It didn't. Almost nothing impacted him. What was it like, you know, watching him from behind the stumps or at slips?
Yeah, it was devastating, was it? I mean, he had the simple mantra in his see ball, hit ball. And to this day, even if you watch him on social media, when a batter is batting out there, that's all he says. That's how you should bat. Just, you know, why are you respecting bowlers so much? And that's exactly the way he played. Forget Sri Lanka, I think. He scored 190 by T against Australia, I think, once.
MCG.
Debut 100 against South Africa. I mean, again, he never really cared about preserving his wicket, looking good or being consistent or technical. He was there to score runs. He was there to drive the fear of God into the bowlers, and he did that so well. Even when Ajanta Mendis and Murali were running through India in Mendis's debut series against them, he scored a double 100 in goal. The only batter, I think, to get into anything beyond 15 or 20 was Sehwag, and that was a double 100 when none of the other batters, including Sachin, including Dravid, including Laxman, could score. And he just hit boundaries. He hit boundaries and sixes whenever he could. He had, I think, also kind of a very stubborn thing about getting to 100 with a four or a six. I remember we were playing SSC in a test match in 2009-10, I think. And then he was on 90-odd, and we actually got Suraj Ramdeep on and bowled a top spin and knowing with the field up, knowing he'll charge and telling him expect to charge. So get it past that edge, we can stump him. And it actually did work. One of those rare things when a plan worked, because he just didn't care. Just wanted to hit that ball out of the ground. Again, absolute match winner as well. You know, he bats for a session. You're well away in terms of winning a test match. Again, incredible player. You know, again, falls into that same category of easy genius.
Someone who's a bit different. Actually, just before I go away, did you captain much against Sehwag? Is he harder to captain against than a normal player? Because
it depends. He always gives you opportunities to get him out, but
yep.
You just have to have fielders in the right place to get him, or got to get him early on. I think in India, we had this tour when I was captaining to India, and we dropped him early twice. That was it, you know, and after that, it was really hard work bringing him back. But he always gave you opportunities, so it was interesting captaining against him. Hard, but very interesting.
Yunus Khan is another player who made a lot of runs against Sri Lanka over the years. A very different kind of player. What are your memories of him as a batter? What made him special?
Again, I think the first time I saw him, I think it was a reserve, and he came and scored, was it twin hundreds at SSC against Sri Lanka?
Well, could be, yeah.
And then he scored 300 against us in Karachi, I think. And in that match, Murali bowled around the wicket. He was out plumb LBW when he was like under 20, and no one appealed. No one appealed. And Simon Toffel was umpiring. And I saw the replay after the ball had that delivery had finished. And I asked Simon, I said, Simon, how was that? He said, too late for appeal, but that was dead. And then he went on to just absolutely flay us. Again, different to the other players, but just, again, very easy on the eye. Really great against fast bowling and spin. Sweeping was just amazing. And he took to reverse sweeping as well later on really easily. So with spin, we knew he would sweep and sweep and sweep when it got difficult. But again, brilliant to watch. Just scored a lot of runs. Like, you know, again, slightly different to even Mohammad Yusuf. Yusuf was, again, very easy on the eye, standing up tall. I think Yunus was a lot lower. Had a lot more movements in him, but again, fantastic batter.
It was Mohammad Yusuf maybe more like a Pakistani version of Mahela?
Yes. Yeah. Inzamam was also like that, I think, in that same category as a Mohammad Yusuf, you know. they're very different. I mean, from being very large and imposing to having power and not really being too nimble. But just again, he had that, I think he had that same streak of genius in him.
I wondered if Yunus Khan wasn't a little bit more like you as a player. It felt like to me, I remember there was a series he turned up in England where he just, clearly his eyesight wasn't what it used to be. And so he was jumping at the short ball and it put England off so much, they didn't know how to bowl to him. And I remember there was another series in Australia he turned up, and as you said, late in his career, he became a reverse sweep. I wonder if Yunus isn't one of those players who was just constantly tinkering, which made him harder to line up than other players?
Maybe. I haven't really had a lot of cricketing chats with Yunus. Maybe. He probably was like me, but he had a lot more shots, especially against spin on the sweep and the reverse sweep.
Sachin Tendulkar, you may have heard of him. obviously, we're going to talk about him quite a lot in the book. But as another great batter that you are, how, when you look at Sachin Tendulkar, what is it that you saw that other players didn't have?
I think it's not just about what other players didn't have. It's just that that level of players have a lot of common as well. But he just had this. I mean, technically, he was amazing. He shifted from having a lower stance like Sehwag with his head almost on the side to a much more upright stance later on. And I mean, you know, naturally just amazing against pace, amazing against spin, very forward thinking in the way he batted, read the game really well, read oppositions really well, could score runs on any pitch, anywhere, at any time.
When you say forward thinking, you mean he realizes what the bowling team wants to do
tactically? Yeah, I mean,
it's
like Aravinder as well. You set a field, they know exactly what's coming at them, how to adjust to it. They do certain adjustments. I mean, both of them had this amazing ability of understanding what shots to play. They'll have all the shots in the world, but they might, you know, play an innings until about 80 runs. They'd play only 3 shots rather than, you know, anything more. One of the few players that could score, you know, all areas of the ground. But I think the greatest thing about Sachin was his passion for the game, his thirst to just score runs, and his ability to withstand pressure, not just on the field, but outside it. A billion people just constantly chanting his name, wanting him to do very well. I can't believe he lasted as long as he did, about a 24, 25-year career, 200 tests. And it's a testament to the character, personality, ability, talent of an individual like him. And that makes him complete as a cricketer, you know, just complete. He had everything, which included steel and determination and grit, last and do the things that he did, which was basically constantly being the best in the world, this day after day, with no kind of break anywhere. And that's absolutely incredible to be. So he was on a different level in terms of that, his mental strength, his mental skills, his personality, his character to withstand all of that and still do as well as he did. Amazing.
I know it's a very different situation because Sri Lanka is a lot smaller, but did the pressure get to you at times of being the main guy?
Our pressures are very different. I think our crowds are very different. They love the game and as passionately as Indian fans, but they're islanders. They look at cricket slightly differently. You know, a loss is never a world-ending loss. They've hurt, they get upset, but they always come back. And we don't have that same kind of pressure Indian crowds used to have. I think the Indian crowds now with IPL and all of that is slightly different, have kind of changed to be a different crowd than they used to be. But in Sri Lanka, it's I think it's a great privilege playing for the fans that we had in Sri Lanka. They still are. I mean, so much talk about the team not being as good as it used to be, but you just watch the last 3 T20s in Dambulla. Tickets sold out, clamoring for tickets, the team doing so well, and the fans just supporting them day after day. That's amazing to see. So it didn't get to us in that same manner.
Callis? Any thoughts on Callis? He was pretty handy.
Again, yeah, you know, you talk about all-rounders and it's just, I don't know how he did it. Bowling so much and so well and then batting like he did, changing the way he batted and just, again, just the volume of runs. It was very workmanlike, almost like a machine. He just went into his zone very powerful, imposing man like a Matthew Hayden. But, you know, just very compact for such a big man. I mean, if you watch his backlift and all of that, it's not as extravagant as a Lara or a Hayden or a Sehwag. But does he had this method that he just could reproduce. And I think he was mentally very, very, very strong. Growing up in the context of a South Africa, of a new South Africa, and being, again, able to do that so well. There are so many times, you know, that you look at Kallis and you wonder, how does this guy do it? And again, in any condition, anywhere, batting at the crucial position of number three, he was just incredible to watch. He was just an incredible, incredible person.
Compared to some of the other players on this list, and I think it's one reason he doesn't get as much credit as he deserves, is I remember watching him against off spin, and he's one of the first players I saw to get outside off stump and just play everything as if it was off his pads, which county cricketers eventually did years later against fast bowling, right? And every time I saw him, he would have a specific method and he would go with that. And obviously, incredible eye and very good footwork. And as you said, a huge man. But he felt like he found a method against each kind of bowling, and then that was the Kallis way, and it was very hard for him to shift in the way that some other players could.
Probably, more so in the limited overs game, where, again, his rhythm of batting was very similar throughout his career. But the Kallis way is the way to greatness, isn't it? I mean, how amazing was he? I don't know whether he doesn't get the same credit, perhaps, maybe in the public eye, but I think when cricketers talk to each other, you mention Kallis. It's just, yeah, everyone's in awe. And you speak about him with a lot of respect and appreciation for the great that he was.
You mentioned Hayden a lot. What Hayden is a different physical, I mean, him and Kallis are similar, but even Hayden's a different physical specimen again. Then it's hilarious watching him with the other batters on commentary when he's on the commentary, because he looks like a fast bowler. How much of Hayden was that you couldn't overpitch and that he had this huge advantage of just the ability to whack it past you? Was the strength and the muscle that important when it came to him?
I think the strength that he had was upstairs in the way he viewed himself in the game. I mean, he's a gentle giant. He's just a lovely, lovely human being, just soft as they come off the field. And even softer now he's stopped playing. I think he went through a really tough time. I think I remember someone telling me that they were in Australia, one of the players I played with in Sri Lanka, saying that he was in the gym trying to become an all-rounder because he had not found a way to break into the side. Yeah. And then when he did and he started opening, I mean, with that Langer partnership, I think, again, he thought about, okay, I'm going to impose myself. I'm going to score runs here. I'm going to show these bowlers who's boss. And he had the game to do it. I mean, even with spin, I think he what we sometimes miss is with the brutality of how he batted, we missed how much he thought about the game. With spin, being the ability to sweep and sweep and sweep for an Australian, it's a very un-Australian thing, to sweep that well and constantly in India in any condition. I mean, so much so, I think short leg used to wear chest pads. I remember Akash Chopra underneath the helmet at short leg with this big chest pad. That was how powerful and intimidating he was. He really prided himself on anticipating what bowlers were trying to do. I've had a few chats with him since he's been on commentary, and it's really fascinating to understand how much he thought about staying one step ahead of the opposition, and he thought about the game. So you miss all of those nuances and subtleties when you just look at Hayden taking a big stride down and hitting you back over the head at 150 miles per hour, or counting Shoaib down, saying, okay, that's one, you know, 15 to go and you're spent, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, again, I had him. I think I had Haydos in my all-time Test 11 as well, I think. But yeah, he's just incredible.
Well, someone I'm pretty sure will definitely be in your Test 11. Let's finish off here. You said you wanted to bat like Brian Lara. you were pretty good yourself. What was it about Brian Lara that you were like, is it a prettiness? Was it the impact he had on games? What was it that you wanted to be like Brian Lara?
He just had everything, except perhaps the thirst to be consistent. I think that never bothered him. I think he just wanted to win games. And whenever there was a challenge thrown at him, he just had that ability to just step up and take you down. I watched him score 680 runs in three tests against us in Sri Lanka with Murali, Vasi, all of them in top form. And a series where him having scored 680 runs by himself, the West Indies lost 3-0. And he did all of that on less than, I think, 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. It's hard to describe his level of genius. I always have comparisons to Aravinda because I don't think the volume of runs ever bothered them. It may have, but it just didn't. I don't think they allowed it to get there. Kind of that, how would you say it? That the spirit down, dampened the way they played. And every time I watch Branham, I used to love Sir Vivian Richards. I still do, both as a cricketer and both as a human being. But Brian Lara as a cricketer is just, I mean, you watch him and you feel grateful to have watched him score runs against you. That's how good he is, you know. And that's quite intimidating to have. He's a small-made man. He has a swagger on the field, but a very, you know, not as much about him off the field in terms of that, in terms of the swagger. But I mean, I challenge you to find anyone that had watched Brian scoring runs and walked away without being completely overwhelmed as to how brilliant that man was. I mean, his backlift. Every coach in the world will tell you, never do that, right? Never do that. Never have that flourish. Never have that height. But just incredible. And his career, the runs he scores, you know, the 501, you know, the 400, the 375, whatever he does, he does it in you know, when he makes a statement, it is world global headlines. I don't know what to say. I don't think I can describe him or break his cricket down. I think again, great cricket brain. Very, very determined, mentally very strong. I think, he was special.
Just on your career, and then I'll let you go, but your father came out towards the end of your career saying that if you'd listened to him more, you would have averaged over 60. And we all had a lot of fun with that on Twitter that day, if I remember correctly. One of the great days of cricket Twitter. Do you have any regrets? Is there anything, because I feel like you got so much out of your batting and you improved and you moved forward and everything. Is there anything that you look back, maybe even now with watching Bazball and, you know, Travis Head and, you know, all the, and Jaiswal and all the, is there anything you look back and go, oh, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd been there.
Yeah, of course, quite a lot. But, you know, those regrets are part of any career, any life. And as long as you're settled with it and you're content having those regrets as well, highs, lows, everything that came with the career I had, I'm pretty happy. So yes, regrets, of course, but I'm pretty content.
I understand that you're content, but if you came through this generation, what do you think you would have been? Is there anything that would have been slightly different about your batting?
Probably. You know, batted with a lot more freedom. Understood the value of entertainment in the sport as well and in the way we played. And in any format, test or T20 or T10 or one day, it didn't matter, I think. To have that real entertainment factor come through in the way we played and how we chased wins. Perhaps all of that, you know, I think times have changed and players play with a lot more abandon, a lot more freedom due to, you know, the advent of T20 and its effects around on every format. And that's great to see. And the fans are enjoying cricket more and more. There's lots of things that probably would have changed. But unfortunately, my time is done.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.